Podcast with Matthew Weiss, entrepreneur, movie producer, tremendous success story. First met him working with him directly on a program they put together back when the Super Bowl was hosted in New York with the Super Bowl and Business Committee. And I had actually brought in guys like Odell Beckham, which at the time we didn't know would be the celebrity that he would become, the star he'd become. Mike Tannenbaum, who's the executive vice president of the Miami Dolphins. We had Steiner Sports there. I know Plaxico Burress was there. We had a huge mix of stars that talked about their different fields. And most recently, his documentary, which is Man in Red Bandana, about the story of 9/11 and Wells Crowther, and which hits home with me as someone who was doing business with people at the top floor of that level, and part changed my life to really become a full-fledged entrepreneur, really post 9/11, and working with Cantor Fitzgerald for all those years as one of my main clients as a rainmaker at the time for a technology firm as a young man. So without further ado, I want to bring on Matthew Weiss as our very special guest. Matthew, what's going on?
Hey, David, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you wonderfully, absolutely wonderfully.
Great.
Today's a beautiful day in the New York area.
Well, I'm down in Florida, so I wouldn't know that, but Florida's pretty nice.
Very, very good. I've given everyone the background, a little bit of how we know each other, and obviously from Entrepreneur, from EO, we got familiar with working with each other on your project with the Super Bowl. But I wanted to talk, our Successful Life podcast really helps people understand about entrepreneurs, people who've become successful, and obviously you've become successful in multiple areas. But always with that entrepreneurship underlying. Before going further, I wanted to let you just kind of give people your background as an entrepreneur.
Sure. So my training is by trade as an attorney. I went to law school, graduated, and was going to go get an MBA, and actually took the GMAT, was ready to go to business school, and got offered a great job working at the New York State Court of Appeals, which is an appellate court in Albany, which is the highest court in New York State. And it was just a great opportunity, and even though I wanted to do business, I couldn't pass it down. So I did that for 2 years, and then when I finished that, again, I took the GMAT, was ready to go to business school, and got a job with a 300-person law firm offering all kinds of money, and I'm like, well, okay, I'll try that for 2 years. After 2 years of that, I realized that I needed to go out on my own and have something that I could build from scratch, because these big firms, I felt, unless you were the 3rd percentile, they were going to use you for 6, 7, 8 years, spit you out, and replace you with someone younger. So at that point, I opened up my own law firm in Manhattan with a law school friend of mine. And I can tell you, even though it was a small little office that was the size of a closet, I was elated, literally on cloud nine, to be the one calling the shots, to be the one running the business, and not having to deal with politics or answering to other people, but doing what my heart told me to do was best for my business. And through the years, you know, we did general practice in real estate, commercial litigation, commercial transactions, personal injury, criminal, some traffic ticket work. And through the years, I realized that I needed to figure out what phrase or word could I own in my industry. And it turned out that the word traffic ticket or phrase traffic ticket was what I decided to own. So through the years, I've built up this practice that focuses on moving violations. Anyone who gets a ticket, does anything wrong behind the wheel, such as drinking and driving, driving with a suspended license, reckless driving, failure to signal, anything bad you do behind the wheel, we can help you. And we built that firm up so that we have 6,000 tickets a year we handle throughout New York State, from the Hamptons all the way to Buffalo. And because we have this narrow niche focus, people know us, and our name is synonymous with traffic tickets. And it allows us to market that. It allows us to promote ourselves that way. And we've just built it and built it in such that, as I mentioned at the beginning, I now live in Florida, even though I run a New York law firm that's based in Manhattan, because the business continues to run, and my role is to oversee things which I can do remotely by email and phone. And I'll visit the office from time to time. But most of the work that I can do anywhere. So why not do it in the tropics with beautiful weather, you know, 12 months a year?
Brilliant. And what the entrepreneurship gave you was that freedom, I guess, to be able to live, do business, and be successful wherever it is that you want to be. What made you choose traffic? Other than that, New York has a tremendous amount of definitely traffic violations. I'm sure that I've been a victim on several occasions of something, either speeding ticket or parking in the wrong place. What was it that attracted you to the niche of being a traffic lawyer?
So a few things. And the primary one is that most lawyers don't want to handle traffic tickets. They think it's beneath them. They think it's too small a matter. And they went to law school for 3 years, and their ego says, I shouldn't be doing something like that. And that's okay. And that's good for me, because I want to be in a business where I don't have a lot of competition, right? So most people that graduate law school snub their nose at traffic tickets and traffic law, don't have any interest in it. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that it's a volume practice. I like to say you need to make a lot of crumbs to make a meal. And as a result, unless you really focus and want to be dedicated to this area of the law, you're not really going to be able to compete or do this law profitably, because you really need to be in court going to do 4 or 5 cases at a time or more, as opposed to, taking one-offs here and there. So you had those two aspects. Plus, as I mentioned, my roots and my heart was always in running a business. And I saw that traffic ticket law could be made into a business as opposed to a professional service. So, for instance, if you're doing commercial litigation and you're involved with a case for many years and it's very complicated, a lot of documents, you really can't just hand that off to someone else very easily. But because traffic tickets are kind of fungible, right? It's the name, the court, this charge, and pretty much the attorney who you assign that case knows what to do once they have that basic information, you have this fungible type of law or legal service you can provide. So I saw that this was scalable, which is unique within the professional service world, whether it's legal, dentist, accounting, whatever professional service is involved. This was a kind of a unique way for me to build and grow a business, not have a job, but actually a business. And so those are the reasons I gravitated towards it.
That's so interesting. It really is. I find when talking to entrepreneurs that the ability to identify the differentiation that they can get in the industry makes all the difference to scaling down the line and building a business, which you have definitely done.
I could add a few more great things about this type of law. Hopefully I don't encourage competitors, but, you know, we have 6,000 clients. If one client is unhappy with us, and of course we want all our clients happy, but if someone's unhappy and they leave, well, our business isn't going to suffer, because it's just one small percent of what we do. So we're not beholden to any one big client. if we do mess up, which is rare, and we're honest with people if we do, well, it's only a ticket, right? We haven't jeopardized a multi-million-dollar litigation. So the stress level is a lot lower. And, you know, when you win for someone a ticket, people get really excited, and more so than other great things that happen to them. You know, you could have a great meal at a restaurant, and if you win a ticket, you're more happy about your ticket than this great meal you had. So we have, as a result, a lot of raving fans because we have done great work for them, and they pass the word. And so most of our business comes from word of mouth, believe it or not.
That's exactly right. And what are some of the things that I guess I dive a little bit in a different direction, but all based off of this. What are some of the wildest things that you've dealt with in the traffic law field, if you want to share?
Yeah, of course. Without disclosing any names, you know, we've had some really bad drivers who've gotten multiple tickets. We had a guy, he had a ticket that was 110 miles an hour, and he was on the Loop Parkway, if you know Nassau County in Long Island, which is near Jones Beach. And he met me in court because the judge wanted to give him 15 days in jail because it was such an excessive speed. And, you know, he comes in and I'm talking to him and he interrupts. He says, "Matt, I was not going 110. And by the way, he was in a Porsche Turbo Carrera. And I said, "Okay, I understand you weren't going 110, but let me just ask you my questions." So I started again and he interrupted again. "Matt, you don't understand. I was not going 110 miles an hour. The cop was wrong." So finally I'm like, "Okay, tell me your story, and then I figure I'll get to my questions after." So he says, "Yeah, Matt, I was not going 110. I was going like 135. And I'm like, "Well, that's not a good defense. How is that going to help you?" He thought because the officer gave him less miles per hour that he somehow was going to win this excessive speed ticket. We had another client who came in. We had another client who came and hired us for a speeding ticket upstate. And at the very end, after he paid us and hired us, he said, "Now, can I get in more trouble if I, you know, fight this ticket?" So my little antennas went up because I thought that was an unusual question, and I felt like there was something he hadn't told us. And so I said, "Well, can you tell us why you think that? Is there something I should know about this stop that's unusual?" He says, "Well, I was naked at the time." I said, "What?" He says, "Yeah, I was naked at the time." So I said, "Well, you could have been charged with indecent exposure, but you weren't. I doubt they would at this point." And, of course, for the rest of that case, until it was over, every time he would contact us, that client was known as Naked Guy.
That's hilarious. That is two great stories. You know, what you built with tremendous success, being an entrepreneur, and then going and working with the entrepreneur organization and, you know, being a forum chair in a South Florida chapter, you know, having worked with you when you were over with, you know, with New York for the Super Bowl gig that you had put together. Tell me about what you enjoy about working with other entrepreneurs and helping other entrepreneurs to become more successful.
So you did mention the Entrepreneurs Organization, EO, which is a worldwide group that has chapters in almost every major city and 50-plus countries. And that's how David and I met, because we were both members. And what's unique about EO is that you have business owners from all types of industry, whether it's manufacturing, retail, e-tail, e-commerce, professional services. And so you have all these different businesses, different owners, different backgrounds coming together, but yet we have the same common problems, which is customer service, marketing, sales. So now we're sharing with one another because we're in different industries, so we're not competing. We have these common issues, and we're learning from one another and cross-pollinating among these different industries. So it's a great network to have this peer-to-peer learning. And in fact, the event that David and I worked on, which was the business of the Super Bowl, was a full-day event, and we got all kinds of speakers to talk about the business of Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl was in MetLife Stadium in New Jersey that year. And we felt like people would be interested in that, and of course hearing from players and GMs, but also learning about that industry and seeing what ideas they can import into their industry. But beyond that, EO provides all kinds of expert learning, events, speakers of all types. And so as a member, I learned so much about running a business. That MBA that I told you I never got, I actually got a real street level take-home value MBA through EO by attending different events and different peer-to-peer opportunities and learning from other business owners how they run their business. And as a result, through the years, I realized that I needed to get myself out of the day-to-day, doing it, but actually work on my business, not in my business. So I started working on systems and practices and policies and big-level, high-level stuff, and slowly got myself out of the day-to-day stuff. So I stopped going to traffic court. Then I stopped working with people that called with questions. I would train people to answer most of the questions and fill in only as needed. So through those years, I was able to get myself out of that day-to-day operations and free up some time for me. So I ended up volunteering and becoming on the board. It's a volunteer organization, and worked on various roles, including president of the New York chapter for 2 years. And then when I finished doing that, I figured I needed something new, something different. And I heard this amazing story, as David mentioned at the outset, about this 9/11 hero named Wells Crowther, and I was just blown away. I wasn't looking to make a movie. I didn't have a bucket list item to make a movie. But when I heard the story about Wells, three things came to my head in quick succession. I said, what an amazing story. Everybody needs to hear the story. I want to share the story with everyone. So while there are filmmakers that look for stories, this was a story that found the filmmaker. And because I had the confidence through building my other business and knowing that I could handle big projects and work with experts and quarterback this, I just took it on. And I, without having read a book on movie making, without having taken a class on movie making, I said, I'm making a movie. And so for the last few years, I've been working on that, and it's just about done, and we're hoping to have it released next year.
And I happen to have seen the original sneak preview with, which was, I believe, last year. And I was overwhelmed with it. An interesting story. I had mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, when I first came out of my MBA program, I went to work in corporate. I worked for actually .com firm, development firm, and one of our big clients was Cantor Fitzgerald. So when you came out with that story, I had already obviously experienced. It was one of the things that motivated me to become an entrepreneur and basically like sealed the deal that it was time for me to do something with my life that I could have a greater impact, which for me was going into the sports industry and you know, going back to, you know, my roots and helping other kids get the chance that I had. But it was the fact that so many people that I had done business with, you know, obviously lost their lives, and you know, with 9/11. And one of the things I always say is that people all over the country understand, and maybe the world understand what 9/11 was, but people who were in the New York area or had people in those buildings, my cousin got out, you know, 2 minutes before one of the buildings came down. They really understand the impact, and it changed their lives in such significant ways, profound ways, that I think in the world we are today, a lot of those people have taken that experience and helped them to do actually great things. A sad, tragic experience changed a lot of people's lives and woke people up to do something more with their lives so that they do have. And I think you've done that with your movie. And I was at the Boston College game, Wells Crowther Day. This was, I believe, my first year, because I own an NFL agency now, and my first year at the agency, we were recruiting players. I happened to go to that game, and they were playing, who what were they playing that? I can't remember where they were playing that day.
USC.
But I was
USC.
Yeah, USC, correct. It was USC. That's exactly right. It was USC. And I was actually at that game, which was a great game. USC had some first-rounders there, and Boston College. They have a bunch of players on the team that I worked with through my camps and programs. And so I went to watch the game, a couple of reasons, because I knew obviously a lot of the kids. And then, number two, I was looking at players from an AC standpoint. So when you came out with that movie and we're doing it, I just knew I had to go and see it. And it was the preview, and it was amazing. Watching the first iteration of it. So that my long-winded approach to telling this backdrop is, what is it about Wells Crowther's story that it moved you to say, you know, I've got to put everything on hold and develop a movie on him?
Well, it's all connected to a piece of fabric, a red bandana. And to me, that's what makes this story so special. Wells was 24. He was an equities trader, and he worked on the 104th floor of the South Tower. He actually worked for a company called Sandler O'Neill & Partners, which was a competitor of your former company, Cantor Fitzgerald. So this equities trader was below the site of where the plane hit. United Airlines Flight 175 hit between 77 and 84, and Wells was on 104. He calls his mom and he leaves a voicemail and he says, "Mom, I'm okay. I just want you to know I'll call you when I get out." And then, of course, the towers came down. And actually, Jeff Wells' father saw the towers come down, knew his son was in the building, and fell to his knees and said, "Lord, take me in his stead." And your heart can't help but break for this father when he says that on film and you see him with his cracking voice, you know, reliving this amazing and heart-wrenching experience. So parents have no idea what happened to Wells because, you know, they didn't hear from him. So minutes, hours, days go by, and eventually they realize that he didn't make it. And so they have a funeral for him about 30 days later, and there was no body. There was no body to respect because they hadn't recovered him. The story takes an amazing turn 8 months later. So now we're in May 2002, and on May 26th, the New York Times published an article called "Fighting as the Towers Fell," fighting for life as the towers fell. And in that article were two women who both said they were saved, led up and out, by a man who had a red bandana on his face. And when Allison, Wells' mother, read that, she knew instantly that had to be her son. You see, Wells always carried a red bandana. From the age of 8, it was this habit he got into. His friends would tease him about it, but he didn't care. He always had it. He would wear it under his helmet when he played lacrosse at Boston College. He's a Division I athlete. He had it to clean up spills or whatever. It was just this thing, his signature item. So Allison sends photos to both these women in the article to confirm that this was her son, and they both positively ID'd him from a photo that she had sent them. And they told him, that was the man that saved me. Your son's a hero. And these women came to Allison and Jeff's house for a barbecue, and they talked about what happened that day. And through their accounts and the New York Times article, in large part, Wells' family was able to piece together the last hour of his life, his finest hour. He put out fires, extricated people that were trapped. He actually carried a woman down on his shoulder 17 flights from 78 to 61, put her down, went back up, let another group down, went back up again, and then ultimately was in the lobby. So he was just within feet of getting out of the building. So he went up and down 3 times. We know he saved at least 10 people. And then he's in the lobby, and they found him with a group of firefighters, and they realized, because one of the firefighters had reported that they were going up with the jaws of life to help more people on 78 where Wells was, or had been, and realized that Wells was going back up with this group of firefighters yet again. So you can imagine this poor family, you know, they're devastated. They lose their only son, and they still cry for him every day. But because of this piece of fabric, this bandana, their whole perspective on their loss shifts. And now they look at it very differently. They're meeting people that are thanking them for raising this amazing young man. And so it's just an amazing story, all connected to this red bandana.
Well, when interviewing the parents, did they give you any clue that Wells had this kind of heroic trait in him, you know, to do something, basically knowing that more than likely doing all these things instead of figuring out a way to maybe help himself, but helping all the others, more than likely would lead to, you know, his eventual death in 9/11. Was there something that his parents thought was, you know, that he had, that he always displayed, that had that heroic trait in him?
It's a great question, David. And to be honest with you, not only his family, but his friends as well, all said that it was not surprising. You know, a couple were mad at him that he didn't get out. They wanted him to get out, but they knew Wells to be one to think of others first. And Honor, which Wells' sister, during her eulogy for her brother, she talked about a story about when she had scored 3 goals in a Boston College lacrosse game because she was a couple years behind him, but also a lacrosse player. And Wells had lost his game earlier that day, but he was happier for her to have scored those 3 goals and have won than if he had scored those goals, because that's how he was. That's what his essence was. It was about giving. It was about others. So it was totally within his character to just help others and do what he could that day.
It's amazing. Becoming a movie producer, I mean, you know, you mentioned that it was obviously the story moved you to become the person producing that movie. But what was the experience like in making a movie, or it's ongoing, obviously, but in making the movie, what was that experience like, and what were some of the things that, you know, you could share with our listeners that someone wants to do something like this down the line, you know, what would be some of the do's and don'ts?
Sure. So it's been a great, great journey. I met so many great people and had so many amazing experiences, once-in-a-lifetime opportunities that I would never have but for the fact that I was, you know, involved with this project. And, you know, just working with Wells' family and parents and hearing what they've done. So they created a trust, the Wells Crowther, a charitable trust, and they've raised over $1 million, and that money goes to worthwhile causes and other students that kind of exemplify or personify the values that Wells has shown or showed. And they have different events like the Red Bandana football game you mentioned. There's a Red Bandana hockey game. There's a golf outing. In fact, this weekend, October 15, is the Red Bandana Run. It's a 5K at Boston College. And if any of your listeners are in the Boston area or want to take a road trip, I highly recommend it. It's unlike any other 5K you'll ever run. It has such energy, such great soul. And last year they had 1,400 plus runners outside the Boston Marathon. It's the largest run in the Boston area. And Wells' parents are always there, and his sisters, and they talk before the run about what this means to them. So they've done such amazing stuff in taking this evil act and this horrible tragedy that happened to their family, and to the best they could, turn it into a positive experience, similar to what you were mentioning before. And so to work and get to know these people, they're just incredible. And then along the way, you know, we were able to get Gwyneth Paltrow to read my script, and she thought it was amazing, and she agreed to be the narrator. So I got to work with her and, you know, meet her and work with her. And she did an amazing job on the narration. And as a side note, it's kind of funny because as a male writing the story, I always envision an A-list actor or actor doing it, and I always envisioned a male because I'm a male and it's a male-dominated story. But when the opportunity presented that Gwyneth Paltrow would look at it, I jumped on it, and really quickly it grew on me to have a female voice was just a perfect balance to the story, you know, because it is very harsh, it is a tough topic, and there are some very sad points in the film. And having that female voice added this softness and balance that really, I think, augments the film. So this, the journey has been amazing. It continues to be amazing. I mean, another fun thing was just sitting in a huge room with a 90-foot screen and my sound effects guy and just adding sound effects. So when we're talking about Wells playing lacrosse and adding, cheering crowds or adding the sound of a buzzer. And it was just fun because I made this film and now we're adding the sound to it and making it even better with very subtle sound effects in the background or the way that the plane hits the building. When you see this film and you see the plane hit, you feel it and you hear it. You've never heard 9/11 like this before because my sound design guy did an amazing job, focused a lot of energy to get it right. And so that was fun. I mean, just a great experience all around. I love movies. I love watching them. And then to be involved with making one is just incredible.
It's, to me, amazing how each thing that you do, you focus in on an area that you could be successful in doing it and find that passion in it and then grow that opportunity from there. Are there principles that you kind of live by as far as an entrepreneur, now as a movie producer, that you find help you to be successful?
Trust and respect. If you don't have that, you don't have anything. And, the crowd has trusted me to get it right. And, I took on this weighty responsibility. Their 24-year-old son got killed. And now this traffic lawyer who never made a film before has been given the opportunity and the privilege to tell the story of their son. So I had to get it right. I couldn't spare expense. I couldn't cut corners. I read the entire 9/11 commission report to make sure I got it all. I researched as extensively as I could, going to archives and libraries and looking for as much footage and information as I could because I just had to get it right for them. So they trusted me, and I felt that responsibility to get it right. And so I think, to me, you start with that, and everything from there you build on.
It's so simple, but yet so often, best word, I guess, would be overlooked. Trust and respect that people bring that into everything they do. How do you go about your day? I'm really curious. What is Matthew Weiss's day like, and how do you approach your day? I mean, you accomplish so many things over time and in your day. How do you approach each day?
Well, generally I wake up and take my kids to school, which is nice. I get to see them for a 15-minute ride to their school. And then I try to do some hot yoga if I can, get my exercise in. And then if I have appointments or meetings, I'll attend those. But if not, I'm in my office emailing and writing and, having telephone conversations on different projects or things I'm working on. But I also, try to enjoy myself and have great experiences. I'd love to do things that I haven't done, push myself. And so, that's kind of the general framework.
Do you utilize or feel that things like yoga helps focus your mind? Or is there, like for me, I actually, the days that I actually get myself up at 4:30 in the morning, which I try to do as often as possible, and start with my workout and go through my process, has always somehow made my day as an entrepreneur a lot better. And I feel like I'm always more focused. I get more done and are better, you know, when I'm in meetings or in conversations or just running even a camp. I've always felt there's better. Is there things that help make you better in what you do?
You know, it's funny because I feel like the yoga is obviously great exercise. There's cardio and there's the stretching, but it also has that mental reset. Not unlike what you're doing when you're working out, when you're in that flow and you're just doing your reps. You know, when you have an opportunity to quiet the mind and just get into a flow or a meditative state, that has been shown from doctors to actually make you healthier mentally. And so, for me, the yoga has that meditative component and lets me reset, stay focused and grounded, and be present. You know, how often are we thinking about where we're going or what we have to do or what went wrong with that last conversation, as opposed to being right here, right where we are, present, feeling the sights, sounds, hearing, textures, whatever is out there. How often are we really, really acutely present? And for me, the yoga helps me do that. And that's an ongoing struggle because often your mind could drift, right? But you try to bring yourself back to the present and be as mindful as you can, as often as you can. At least that's what I do.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how you can get yourself in a state and through focus and relaxation and just kind of sweating it off that can get you in the right mindset for your day. With respect to moving from New York to South Florida, my guess is that you've been going to South Florida, you know, in winters as often as possible, and maybe I'm wrong, testing the waters to see if that was a place that you wanted to be. What made you change that lifestyle from living in New York and working in New York to going down to South Florida?
So it's years in the making, right? Getting my business at a point where it didn't need me at a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we have three kids, but my oldest, when she graduated high school, we felt the two others could make the move. You know, once you have kids in the school system, it's hard to disrupt them, pull them out, and have them start a new school. But because of the personalities of my two kids, I felt we could pull it off once my daughter graduated. So we came down here, looked around, found this brand new development, and we put a deposit down on a place, and we built a house. And I can tell you the reasons are very simple. It's cleaner, greener, less stressful, better weather, lower taxes. So why not live in a place with all those benefits? If I could provide a better quality of life for myself and my family, why not do it? And, you know, I do miss my friends and family that are still in New York, but you know, they'll come to visit, I'll come to visit them. And overall, we're very, very happy with the move.
Very, very, very interesting stuff. I first of all, I want to thank you. You're always someone that I admired. When I was in NEO, you were always someone that was a friendly face, someone that you could, you know, you always came over and said hello. And as you know, for people that join organizations for the first time, that gives them a sense of belonging. That sense of belonging is critical, and I've made some great friends out of EO. And I always remember, you know, you coming over and just taking a second, introduce yourself, and then obviously eventually get, you know, I got involved with the Super Bowl event. So I really just want to thank you. I want to thank you for coming on, and I think you've shared some amazing things about business and life. And I wish you really the very best, especially with your movie as it continues to evolve.
Thank you. My
Have
pleasure,
a great
David.
Thank you.
Take care.
That was Matthew Weiss, successful entrepreneur, tremendous lawyer, built a tremendous law practice. Tremendous movie that he made. I happened to see the preview of it with Gwyneth Paltrow as the person that is doing the voiceover on most of the movie. Tremendous person. I've always had great respect for Matthew Weiss. He's someone that You can learn a lot from, not just in business, but in life and what's important. Go see his movie when it does officially come out, The Man in the Red Bandana. It's become his life's passion, and he does unbelievably well by the Crowther family and Wells Crowther. And having been someone that lives in the New York City area, was there during 9/11, that changed my life. Lucky enough to have a cousin get out of there during 9/11. I truly appreciate everything in that story and helping the world that we are in today to understand and make sense of things that are most important. Once again, I want to thank everybody for being on the Success for Life podcast. Until next time, we did two great episodes today. You can always check me out at NUC Football on iTunes. You can go and find the Success for Life podcast. This one should be up today under the NUC Media. And then we'll also be on the Success for Life podcast iTunes site as well. Until next time, Success for Life podcast, I'm David Schumann. Keep striving to be your very, very best every single day. ¶¶